missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Britt.
Hi.
Delaney.
Yo.
And Mare.
Hi.
Today we'll be discussing episode 7 of book 4 of The Legend of Korra, Reunion. In which there's a reunion. You know, descriptive title. Good job not naming it The Reunion, guys.
Yeah. I was surprised.
I was surprised, too, because Nick got that wrong last week. The episode went up today on Nick.com only a few hours ago. So Nick's website was having some problems, which they called server issues. Don't know what's going on there, but this is... I'll give them some slack because this is the first screw-up Nick's website team has had for this entire season. They've been pretty on point. You know, other than last week getting the title wrong, but... You know, whatever.
That may not have been their fault.
This was certainly their fault. I mean, it could have been Viacom.
I mean,
side.
This week, but last week.
Last week. Well, no, they saw the title card. They could have known as the Battle of Zafu. Anyway.
Never mind. We're just gonna keep going.
Yeah. Anyway, we will be discussing the reunion and all the craziness involved, including all the shipping, including all the Korra in new outfit and stuff like that. Yes. Anyway. The only production update we have is that Mike and Brian are in Korea for the week, working with Studio Mir on the finale. That's exciting. It is November 14th and they're still helping finish animate the finale and it's going up in a month. That's crazy. That's why they're spending an entire week there. That's like a long time. They usually don't do that. Let's get into it. Episode 7 of book 4. The reunion is written by Mike, notable, directed by Colin, storyboarded by Olga Eugene, Junju, and Natasha. Let's get into initial thoughts. What did you think of the episode overall, and what was your, you know, like one thing that stood out to you as your favorite part? Let's start with Mel.
I liked it. I liked the A plot a lot better than the B plot, but it's not the worst B-plot in the history of B-plots. My favorite part was... I don't know, because I liked... I mean, there was some... I'm going to actually go with the lunch scene, just because there was so many fight scenes. I'm gonna go with the not fight scene, so I'm going to say the lunch scene was my favorite.
Okay. Britt, what do you think?
I thought it was a pretty solid episode. It was funny. Like, funnier than some of the other episodes, like, just in general. I thought this one was on a point. Like, when Wu, like, rolled in the laundry. I'm in laundry.
I have
no idea why, but that was hilarious. The awkward lunch scene was pretty funny. The Bolin and Varric scenes were overall pretty hilarious. I mean, some of the early ones. The later ones get kind of serious, but... It was, like, a solid episode. It wasn't, like, fantastic, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Delaney, what do you think?
I really liked this episode. I didn't like it as much the first time I watched it because I just kept waiting and waiting for stuff to happen. But once I calmed down and watched it the second time, I really enjoyed it. The Korrasami, of course. But my favorite part of the episode, and I really liked the B-plot. I know some people didn't, but I actually enjoyed it. But my favorite part of the whole episode is when Asami goes, "I've built these roads," like she because she told Mako off. That was my favorite part.
I don't think it was as good as Boil It Yourself.
No, it's not. It's up there because she's driving. And the attitude.
I loved that scene so much. I love it when my babies fight.
No.
Okay. Any, we'll get to that. But any other thoughts, Del?
Great episode. Good. Bowen is getting character built. Always good. Yay.
Yay. Yes. Varric, too. Interesting.
Yeah, Varric was spectacular.
Mare, what do you think?
I really liked it. Initially, it really bothered me that there wasn't more build-up to her actually, like, meeting with Mako and Asami. Like, it just kind of bothered me that she was suddenly in new clothes and all that. But I really liked the lunch scene. The B-plot was good, but it wasn't my favorite. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I like the lunch scene a lot, and I like the end when Cora looked at Mocha like that. That made me happy.
all this shipping. Anyway, I'm surprised. I'm just surprised and disappointed in my two Coruscantians not mentioning the blush more. I mean, I think that's worthy of initial thoughts.
I thought we were going to gush about
it. I thought that's worthy of it. Anyway.
See, that's part of the lunch scene.
To me, that was like shocking. Cora blushing at Asami's compliment. Like, I don't know. I was just completely, that was like more surprising than anything else that happened this season and more notable to me than a lot of stuff. Anyway, this episode was continuing the trend of solid but not incredible episodes of Book 4 since Cora alone. I just absolutely hate that they spent time on the B plot, but they executed it well. Upon further inspection, they really did. But just like, why would you spend time on this? We got other stuff to do anyway.
And the episode's called Reunion.
Yeah.
Why?
Anyway,
yeah, have
Bolin and Varric, or at least Bolin is like reunioning with his old self. I don't know
how to describe it. Bolin is reunioning with his old
Hidden
self.
Bay plot,
you've heard it here first. Yeah. Anyway, I mean,
he needs character development. He hasn't gotten any in 4 seasons, so
yeah, that's why I was.
And Chris is trying to cram it all into 1 season, and Varric is there to be adorable.
To be adorable, yes. I think
his lava bending and all of those scenes were top notch, though.
Lava bending continues to be way too powerful, but that's okay.
Bolin, that's why Bolin, they gave it to Bolin. Himself. Yeah, because Bolin wanted to take it.
Bolin needed something.
Anyway, I agree with Britt. The humor is really, really on point here. I agree, like the laundry line from Wu, and also just the end at the end with Grandma Yin and Wu. That's just hilarious
Everything
to me.
With Wu,
I don't great. Know. Wu is a really good character, but just the end.
He's just unabashedly funny. Like, I can't explain exactly why he's so funny.
He's just very good.
He's just so ridiculous.
I don't know. There's a few things like those two and some other lines with you just cracked me up. And the Kurosami blush and the whole dinner scene was good. And the rest of it, I wasn't too into the chase or fight scenes, you know. I don't know. They felt a little shoehorned in. Although the tanks fight scene in Act 3, the mecha tanks, was interesting for reasons that weren't maybe highlighted enough. I don't know, just like the diversity of bending, like that's
I like the IMF a lot thing, like the thing that Varric made that was like
the shots
on all the machines.
It was like,
yes, that one, that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that thing they do in the Matrix where they have a burst and it destroys the machines.
Anyway,
you mean electromagnetic pulse.
That's yeah.
There
anyway,
you go.
Anyway, we're going to get into specifics.
EMP, that's what they call it in the Matrix.
Yep, that's because
it's a thing.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, great. Now we don't have to talk about that when we get to it. Good guy.
Yes,
so we're going to go specifics as we get to them. Shipping stuff is going to come up as we get there, I guess. There's a lot of... We have a nice variety of shippers on here, although the Coruscantians do outnumber the others, but that's just a function of the fact that half the podcast ships Coruscant. But we do have a Macorian and a Masamian. Is that...
And Vuko.
And Vuko represented. Oh. Yeah, that counts. Okay. I don't know if that does count.
Vuko is real in this episode.
The Vuko is a thing. I'll say that, you know. Okay. Act 1. We start off with the scene that... by the way, thank you again to Mel for outlining. We'll get Mel's little quips in the outline. Cora is back into Air Temple Island. This is the clip we got last week. It's kind of boring. Mel says...
Other than the Naga.
Mel says Tenzin's like, hi, bye, Kuvira. Yeah, he does kind of bring
much.
It up pretty quickly.
It was very rushed.
Milo,
I'm really tired of seeing the clips. Like, it makes me not interested in the first 2 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, I'm officially.
I noticed
don't
it right
them.
Now.
I'm officially off the clip train. It's exciting Friday night, but just by the time the episode comes, I don't like it. Milo says he wants sweet tats, which was actually a funny Milo line. Fine, Milo,
yes.
You're a bad character, but that line was funny. And then Pema giggles.
Tenzin was like, no. There was no discussion.
Yeah. Tenzin just like, no.
No.
But the way Tenzin said no was also great.
It was pretty good. Apparently, Bumi lost a lot of weight. Yeah, because he's in the skin-tight airbender things. And
he probably also works out now and eats vegetables.
Yeah. Eats vegetables. Yeah, one would assume.
He's a vegetarian now.
Presumably, yeah. I'm not sure. I wonder how much they're... It's interesting to get into the airbender culture because, you know, like Tenzin doesn't impose the baldness. It's like what's optional, what's not, you know, interesting side discussion we could get into at some point. Anyway, and then they talk about Bolin. Opal seems, interestingly, like despite Kuvira telling Opal last episode that Bolin's like doesn't care about her anymore. She seems like optimistic that he wouldn't follow her.
Yes,
which is nice, I guess. That kind of gets me more back on the Opal, the Bopal bandwagon here. I don't know.
Did Batar bother to tell anybody? We think they died.
Well, the people that escaped definitely wouldn't have known, but it's very possible that Kuvira's entire camp thinks Bolin and Varric died. But just not anyone in this episode, except, you know, they're at the end. Anyway, we go to the first of the scene of the B-plot. Bolin is carrying Varric. Julie carried me 20 miles in one day, and that was after she sprained her ankle.
Poor Julie.
Sounds like something my sister would make me do.
More of the Bolin is not Julie plot from last episode. That's a lot of that. Does Varric say, I'm a horrible, horrible person?
Yes.
It's interesting.
He's
like,
rolling
I think,
around on the ground.
I guess that's kind of the thesis statement for Varric's plot development here, like him realizing that his conscious stuff.
He rolls around on the ground and says, let the worms take me. Yeah. I deserve it. And then Bolin's like, no.
Yeah, Bolin's no. Like, yeah. Didn't love the way that was phrased with Bolin's, like, you're not getting off that easy, like, getting into some territory, which I don't like phrasing of with things that's implying. But it was not explicitly said. I'll let that off the hook, I guess. They get caught in a trap that is very obvious. And I do like the end. I wonder if they, like, I was thinking as, like, Bolin was on Varric's back and they walked one step. If it's said in the script, Bolin gets on Varric's back and walks literally one or two steps and gets into the trap.
And then, like, immediately.
Yeah. I would really love to see the script from this episode. Not for this reason, but there's some scenes I really need to see what was in the script and what was not. Specifically the blush and some other things, but specifically that. Anyway, we're certainly going to get to that. Okay, here, now, because it happens right away in Act 1, which is the most interesting act of the episode. Yes. Asami is reading a magazine. Sam, later in her thoughts, calls this feminist propaganda, which I think is pretty on point. Like, I saw a post on Tumblr comparing this to a 1940s, feminist woman get out to work thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, woman engineers and stuff like that. It makes sense that Asami be reading that. That was pretty cool.
I liked it.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, I hope you haven't been waiting long. Only 3 years. Hugs. Asami is a giant, says Mel.
Yes, Asami is like 9 feet tall.
She is a titan.
Called the heels.
Yeah, apparently Korra is what? How tall?
5'7".
5'7", so that must make Asami
now.
Like...
They said they made her taller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was 5'7", that's true. But she's probably said she grew like 2 inches, so she'd probably be about 5'9".
Which would put Asami at like...
6 foot one or
six
so.
6 feet? That's crazy. I don't know if Asami is 6 feet. 6 feet. That's pretty tall.
I think it looks like that.
Is she wearing
she's
heels?
That tall.
She probably is wearing heels.
I don't know.
I think we actually.
She's probably about 5'11".
No, I thought we looked at her new outfit and like her old outfit was heels, but her new outfit, I don't think it's heels. And if
it is, I'm looking at her right now. They're heels.
A solid 6 inches.
Yeah. Well, Asami was. I did look at a screenshot from Book 3. Asami was taller than Korra there too, but
maybe
she was
like mountainly taller.
Yeah. Now they're. What do you guys think of the Korra Asami height difference now?
It's important.
Why is it important?
As in all ships.
because height differences are just really important.
Okay. I
wrote a fic
so.
About it, Dylan. It's important.
I guess so. okay. So Asami. So first, Korra's in her new
there
outfit.
There are no short people in this show.
It's true.
There are short people. The kids are incredibly short.
Who? Oh, the kids.
The kids really make us short people feel
anyway,
better.
Mary, you didn't like you didn't like her like getting this outfit.
No, I didn't like how it didn't show.
She was just
like,
randomly in this new outfit, right? Like, where did it come from? Yeah.
She threw it together from a thrown together outfit from a bunch of her old outfits throughout the season.
Did she like cut off the sleeves, or is that what it looks
weird,
like?
But that really like changed a lot of the episode for me because like I felt so underwhelmed in that part. I was like, seriously, like, did we not get any build up to this? I mean, I would have liked to have seen her like thinking about meeting up with them or them thinking about meeting up with her.
The scene happens super fast. Yeah, like it doesn't seem like anything. There's no thing before it.
Like we could have had like a Lin scene, like where Lin like puts on her armor. Like we could have had something.
Once again,
like
no Lin, but there is a Lin mention. So I don't know if that counts.
I just need to see it. You don't understand.
Also, we have Jeff count counted the number of frames Jenora was in this episode. It was 10. And she does not speak her dwarf. Frames are very happen very fast. So yeah, that I'm a little upset about that.
We could have had Cora getting dressed is what I meant.
Yeah.
In her hodgepodge of outfits from the previous season.
Something like that. Like, I understand. Like, I don't care that much, but, like, that would have been nice.
Anyway. So the sleeves. Opinions. Cora, more or less attractive in new outfit than Earth Kingdom outfit.
More. Her new outfit's great.
I think.
More, I don't know if I like the glove sleeve thing.
I don't like the logic behind it, but they're really nice to look at.
Like, I feel like it's something she would just decide to wear. Like,
she's like, huh, you know what would complete my outfit?
Yes, exactly.
That's what happened.
Yeah. I like the boots.
The boots
that were
based off of real boots. I could write a poem about the boots. The boots are the best thing.
I wouldn't read that poem.
Wow, that is rude.
A poem about boots.
Rude. Okay. Anyway,
no, I am really like the boots are my favorite thing.
Anyway, yeah, I guess
I like her hair because I have
her hair's the same.
Her hair is wonderful.
Isn't it just the same?
Yes,
but it's still great. No, yeah, Cora's really cute now. Like, not that she wasn't before, but
it's excessive now.
Way more. It's just like she's like almost like an anime character of cuteness. Like it's
yeah.
It's talking about there. Cora.
It's
right?
Cora. Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Yes. Anyway. Okay. Now we have the scene.
You left out the part about the instance of the. Oh, we're getting there. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry.
Asami comments, she says, I love your hair or something, and then Cora, what does she say? She says, thanks. I don't remember. Yeah. And then she blushes. And she blushes!
The most intense blush.
And she looks down, too.
And she looks, she puts a hand on her hair, looks down, and blushes. That's like telltale signs, right?
See, if this was a heterosexual couple, everyone would be...
Well, I think everyone is. Yeah. I think everyone is.
My point
anyway.
Is, any argument here that you could make, like Sam. Well, I guess Sam talked about it, it's like, we'll talk.
Yeah, I guess Sam. We can read Sam's essay on this after the dinner scene because then I think it has all the context.
Okay.
But
yes.
But let's do that after. Basically, I don't know. From the perspective of, from my perspective here, I'm like a Kurosami shipper who's like, it's pretty latent right now. Like, it's not happening in the show, so I care about it, but not. It's not, like, everything, but I don't...
I shipped Masami, and I thought it was pretty shippy.
But I don't, like, oh, this seemed good. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't expect it to ever happen because of the show's never portrayed any LGBTQ characters in the entire series.
Doesn't mean it can't start.
But now here we get this. It was... My point is that it was incredibly surprising. Like, I didn't expect this at all, and it was wonderful. And this was the biggest takeaway from the episode, honestly. I don't know. It's just so shocking to me. Like, obviously, obviously, there's some little Makora moments at the end, but we expect those, right? This was completely unexpected. I don't know. And we'll talk about this in more detail in, I guess, a few minutes. Mel says, first instance of the word snazzy.
I'm expecting more.
Yes. Are you pro snazzy?
Huh?
Are you pro snazzy?
I say snazzy a lot in my own life.
Snazzy's a great word.
So yes, okay. Yeah. I think this, any possible canon Kurosami interpretations of the plot up to this point are almost entirely Asami liking Cora. So this is incredibly notable for it being completely the other way around. Everything Asami does in this scene can be interpreted as platonic. But it's way harder to do that for Cora's actions, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty notable. Mm-hmm. Reunion with Mako. Hugs. Wu appears.
Okay.
Okay.
Mare's arrived. New challenger approaches.
What happens with the hugs in the scene?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, I practically called how Makora would be in this episode. Like, I didn't even think that they would hug. But, I mean, the hug, like, I saw the hug as pretty much platonic. Like, it wasn't really, like, romantic to me. But, like, I could totally call...
The Koreans are yelling in the distance.
But I totally called, like, Woo, like, popping up in the middle of them. Like, I actually made that post. And I thought that was romantic because, I mean, if you get the screen right, like, they're just staring at each other. And, like, he's just in the middle of them. And then, like, Woo gets up in her face and Mako gets, like, really, really mad. And, yeah, that was that scene. Like, I didn't really think that there was much romantic to that, but yeah, I like that there's a lot of tension going on right now.
So, I saw other people pointing that out on Tumblr too. With Mako getting angry at Wu for busting in and then hitting on Korra. So
yeah, okay. So here's,
I have a lot more to talk about like Mako and Wu, but it's not at that part yet.
We're just getting all of them.
Octagon. Who wouldn't want to hit on Korra here? Anyway, Wu would. I basically agree with the interpretation here. I don't think that hug was surprisingly. The hug was, there was no blushing, there was no awkwardness, like, this is very atypical of Mako and Korra.
Yeah, I thought
hugs.
That too.
It was surprisingly like, not awkward.
I want them to be friends, so I was pretty happy.
Anyway, yeah, they were, that was very platonic. If you're going to interpret the Mako being mad at Wu as romantic, that's fine, but the hug itself definitely wasn't.
Like, Wu hitting on Korra
was very, very predictable.
Yes.
Very
pretty. Yeah.
Can you blame Wu though?
No, I can't.
Am I mad about it? No. It's funny. I mean, he
goes overboard, obviously, but he's too lovable.
Yeah. Well, it's Wu. Like, that's what it's who he is.
I have better evidence coming up, though, like in the dinner thing.
Yes. Wu orders spicy octopus fritters.
That sounds delicious. Can I have
those? Actually, you know what that is? That's probably just calamari.
Yeah, it's just calamari. Yeah.
We have sweet chili calamari at my work.
He says something water, right?
Something aloe water. And I was what?
Just to keep his
cucumber.
Cucumber.
What was it? Cucumber.
Is cucumber aloe water?
Something like that.
Aloe, I think anyway. It was. Which is an actual thing people drink, is aloe juice. It's very gross.
Asami is annoyed that Wu is with them. That is true. That does happen.
Yeah.
I don't know why
if
I commented
you were a
zombie, that.
You'd
this
be
is
like,
the entire outline.
I need
That's
to hang out with my
that.
Girlfriend and my boyfriend.
Yeah. Okay. And not let me finish the outline on the dinner scene, then we can go around the horn on the ships. Hey, Pop and Stavatar stayed for me. I want to see your eyes glow. Says Asami. Says
what?
Asami.
That's the best one.
Asami says she was worried when Korra told her she couldn't enter the Avatar state. Mako asks how Asami knew that, gets mad Korra never wrote him. Subtext is happening. Mako, if it makes you feel any better, she didn't write me either. I love that line.
That is my favorite.
And then he makes a face after. It's great, too.
Yes. I'm probably the only one, and y'all are probably going to get really, really mad at me, but it kind of made me upset that Asami said that. Like,
well,
I was just surprised that she said it.
She blurted it out by accident.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
She's totally outing a secret between her and Korra. Yeah, no, I think you can get upset over that.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I wasn't particularly happy.
I'm surprised, like, more people aren't talking about that. Because, I mean, if I were Korra, that would have probably made me really mad.
She broke the girl code. Like,
I mean, one, Korra doesn't get mad. Two, Asami obviously didn't mean it. Three, Asami's just incredibly lovable.
Yeah, so it's not, like, terrible, but it's still not.
And it's one of those things that, like, I mean, we've all done this. Like, you're not really paying attention. It's going with the conversation. She's like, oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that. Like, it was completely understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I just wish I was just surprised it happened.
Yeah, I wish I would have saw some remorse from her, though.
Yeah, they moved pretty fast around that, I agree. Yeah. Let's start with Brit and Masami. Brit, where's the Masami in this dinner scene?
Let's see, they sit on the same side of the table, and they talk to each other, and...
They get really close and whisper, like
they
Masami
do. They get really close
talking.
And they whisper, and... what else do they do?
Not much.
She's waiting. Let's see. He gets them a table at dinner. That means that they had to talk at some point. That's it.
Okay,
that's
it's canon. Canon. I've heard enough. It's canon.
Clearly,
it's
enough. You have enough.
It's like three things, guys.
I'm sure we'll get more and more hidden in the song.
Because I had to plan. Okay, Korra, we're going to meet you at this restaurant at this time.
Are Mako and Asami just trying really hard to hide their current relationship from them, the two? Is that what's happening?
Well, that's the other thing, too, because Mako's like, what's going on with you two?
You know what else is Masami? His entire family is living in her house.
That's true. That is true.
I do have questions.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute.
Okay, well, we'll get to more Masami. Mara,
where
was
the... Does Mako live there?
Maybe.
He actually might.
Okay.
No, he lives
Where's what after post hug? What is the Mako in the dinner scene?
Okay, one of the things I feared most before this episode was that the letters wouldn't get brought up. So I'm really, really glad that they did, and I'm really glad that it showed Mako getting hurt over it. I mean, first it showed him getting hurt, and then it like showed him going from hurt to being mad, and I just think that I'm just really glad that that was there, because that, to me, shows that they're going to talk that out later. But, like, the dialogue, he was like, why didn't you write me? Hello would have been nice. And I just felt, I really felt really bad for him there. And going to the thing, like, later with Wu wanting to go to the bathroom, he was upset over that, and he's stressed about Korra. And, I mean, she's sitting right there, but he's, I think he feels a lot farther away from her than he ever has. And I think that's really upsetting for him. And I feel really bad.
But. Yeah, he brought it out on Wu.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think I would be skeptical of the letters coming up again if it weren't for the fact that we know Mako and Korra are going to go on a solo journey. So, like, you would think that they would talk about it then.
Yeah, I think I definitely think they will. And I'm so glad that that was brought up. I'm really glad to see the tension between them. That's a good sign for me.
Yeah.
And I think that goes into how Mako acts later in the episode. I feel like there's been a lot of negativity towards his actions later on. But I feel like those are credited to, again, him.
Mako doesn't need much of an excuse to be in a bad mood.
No.
I don't... I agree with him. Like, if it was somebody I loved and I didn't hear from them in 3 years, I would probably be upset.
And then found out, like, if we were supposed to be friends.
It's certainly understandable to be upset over that from Mako's perspective. Yeah. I will say it's interesting that the letters dynamic comes up without Bolin present, because if Bolin was there, he would certainly have an over the top reaction, which would kind of drown out, you know, Asami and Mako. And, like, so now I think him being absent maybe is necessary for us to get this side of it.
Yeah,
I would definitely agree.
Like, but I felt really bad for Mako right there.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really feel bad, but I understand that. I don't know.
I'm a Mako empathizer.
Mako. Oh, man, you Mako empathizer.
He's my favorite character. I felt bad.
You're like
bad.
You're like a Kuvira supporter, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's the equivalent, yeah. Okay. It's not clear when we should talk about the Kurosami in more detail, but I think now is a good time. But we are only...
I think now's a good time.
Okay, so this is going to be kind of long, but then we probably won't talk that much about it after. I'm not sure, though. So we have the blush, and then we have the fact that they talk about the letters, but there's not really much there beyond the blush, or is there stuff? Opinions?
Beyond the blush, a new fan fiction.
That's definitely already exists.
It's in the works. Well, so...
You can go ahead.
I have nothing.
Okay.
Oh.
Thank you for that.
Well, like, are we just talking about this scene? Because, like, for the rest of the episode, like, unless you want me to talk about it now, because, like...
Okay, let's read Sam's essay first. We'll see if she brings it up.
I like Sam's essay.
Sam's essay is very long. Okay, I guess we're going to read it in full, though, because it is important.
I mean, nothing else you're going to say is going to compare.
She makes a lot of really good points in there.
No, yeah, so. See, she basically recaps the scene. Okay, this is Why Korra and Asami Are Gay by Sam. Let us read.
Subline, Beyond the Blush.
Yeah, Beyond the Blush. Okay. Except also the blush, because she also talks about that. Korra and Asami. This is in Sam's style, of course, which is very Sammy. Korra and Asami, they're in love, but in all seriousness, it's being really implied that they're into each other. Last season was a doozy with all the Korra-Asami feels, but let's talk specifics within this season. Korra alone. So Korra goes off to the South Pole. Asami was ready and willing to drop everything and go down there with Korra. Amazing. Asami's letter also starts off with, I miss you, like, come on. Also, the only person she keeps in contact with is Asami. Now, this can be just a friendship thing, yeah. I'm sure people say that. But still, the fact of the matter is that Asami's the one person Korra felt comfortable talking to about this stuff. In Korra's words, it was easier to talk to Asami about this than Mako and Bolin. Why? I really want to know specifically why, but we probably never will. Anyway, that's a deep level of trust right there, and at the very least makes them biffles, if that's how you pronounce, BFF-Elliot.
Yes, biffles.
Which is still lovely and amazing, and I'm all for it. But there's something here. The impression that I'm getting from Asami is that Korra is the most important person to her right now. Korra is like the hope in Asami's life, almost. I've gotten that impression from what little we've seen of her this season, so I might sound like I'm grasping at straws, but hey, this is what I got. She lights up like a soft, sentimental lamp you've had since you were a kid in the first episode when Mako brings up that Korra is coming back. Even her static image in the background when Tanrak's like, LOL, Korra's supposed to be here with you, is devastated. Asami has, like, no one. She and Mako don't see each other ever, really. Doesn't see Bolin ever. Hiroshi's like, LOL, write me back, and Asami just doesn't want to deal with him and his BS. So who else does she have besides Korra and the hope she's coming back? I mean, she has her company and its success, but that doesn't really fill the void. And I think with that and what's happened this season solely, like I didn't mention last season and all of that stuff, maybe the nature of their feelings for each other isn't so platonic. If it is, it's really deep platonic love and trust right there, which again, I'm all for. So what happened today, Kor and Asami meet once again. Also, Asami is reading some feminist propaganda, Sura's face. They hug, Sura's face. They hug, exchange, it's so good to see you. Asami says, Asami says she's loving Korra's hair, and Korra blushes, and Korra says Asami is looking at snazzy as always. Korra touches her hair and blushes. She blushes. Honestly, I honestly do not think they would put that in there if it didn't mean anything. Like, yeah, in real life, people blush when anyone, friends, crushes, etc., compliments you. But this is animation. There's time and money involved. People were paid to animate Korra touching her hair and paid to color Korra's face in a blush. Now you can say, wait, Sam, in your stupid favorite episode of season one, The Spirit of Competition, Bolin compliments yes. Korra and she blushes even though she didn't see him in a romantic light. And to that I'll say, yeah, that did happen. But that was set up in a flattering romantic context. Bolin was in a way trying to make her blush and feel super flattered, trying to get her to go out with him after Mako says no to her by telling her that he thinks she's the toughest, buffest, funniest girl around. He was saying that to be romantic, and Korra clearly was flattered in a way that was like, oh, you really feel that way? Thanks, bro. I'll hang out with you. Asami made a pretty platonic comment, and Korra took it like, OMG, she likes my hair. She likes my hair. OMG, 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 swoon. Basically, in a way that anyone would react after the person they had feelings for compliments them. This rockets the relationship into the romantic realm. Then it comes out that Korra only wrote to Asami, and Mako's like, okay, thanks, you bleeps. And then Korra and Asami have a tiff about Asami seeing Hiroshi. Korra saying that he could be trying to manipulate her, and Asami brings up how Korra disappeared for 3 years and doesn't have the right to tell Asami what's best for her. That last clash was like, I don't even know. There's rawness. There's a lot of hurt in Asami that Korra just wasn't there. And for two of those 3 years, she didn't even speak to her. It's real right there in this moment. Asami maybe feels like Korra abandoned her, and it brings back all of the crap of Korra being super important to Asami, maybe being the only person Asami feels like a real deep connection with and love for after Hiroshi screwed up everything. And then Korra left, and Asami had no one. And then Korra wrote to her, and now we're here. There's something here, it's here. And even if they don't elaborate even if they don't elaborate on it, which I'm 99.9999% sure they won't, it's here, dude. I can see it. Also, it really bothers me that people have, frankly, homophobic arguments against the ship or any ship in a cartoon that is queer. They're just good friends. They can't love each other romantically. They're both girls. This is a Nickelodeon show. Think of the children and what it would do for them. Why do they have to make everything gay? No, screw you. Screw you for assuming there's harsher language here. Screw you for assuming that these characters cannot possibly be anything other than straight, number one. Screw you for putting people down for seeing what they see in the show just because in the real world you don't like it, number two. Screw the children, and it's actually important. I hadn't read this part before, and it's actually important to have queer representation in kids' media because there are queer kids out there. Number three, number four, these characters love each other in a way that is very clearly crossing the romantic threshold, and it's fine if you disagree. But I will be blanked if you're going to use heterosexism and homophobia as your argument. If it's a duck, then it's a bleeping duck. Don't pretend it's a goose because you're against ducks. Bam. Okay. That was like Sam's argument.
Yeah, I had a pet good. Duckling once.
Oh my god, that is.
Thank you, Sam.
Let me see how many words
you
that
call
was.
Me Sam.
Did I call you Sam?
Rip.
I don't know. That was just 8,000 words.
Like, take the blush today, like today's episode. Like, I can really see that. Even though I ship Makora, I see that. But like, I feel in the beginning, I feel like Asami was a therapist role. Like, I'm in occupational therapy school, and they teach us about treating your patients with dignity, like having the support system there. And I felt like Asami was the support system Korra was writing to. Asami saw her in her weakest. I mean, that was that's how I take it. Like, I can see how other people interpret it.
And you mean, like, the end of book three and so the beginning?
Yeah, and like that Korra continued, alone. Like, into Korra alone, mm-hmm. to her writing her, because Asami saw her in her weakest, like, a therapist. I mean, Asami was pretty much a caretaker.
I feel like that's really ignoring the Asami perspective, though. Like, I understand that she would, like, I get, like, the therapist role that Asami would be taking on, but I really think that's hard to not see Korra as the most important person in Asami's life at that point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She probably yeah. definitely is.
But. So, like,
especially the reaction. Like, I was the just fact saying that Asami yelled at Korra.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that happen. Like, see, Asami never gets mad.
That's interesting because everyone had that headcanon that she was going to smack her when she came back. So when you had that nice, you know, sort of hug, and it was like, all right, great, we're back. We're friends again. And they sit down, and then Korra says one thing, and then Asami immediately jumps on her. We didn't get to talking about that yet, but I felt like that was a really it was very solid. Because it showed a lot more than it told. You didn't need to. From that you could realize there was a lot of pent up tension in there.
Yeah.
That released a lot quicker than it should have.
Yeah, and again, this was by Sam. This essay, in case it was not clear. And I think the fighting the fighting aspect is really interesting. It's really hard for me not to see that as just Asami being clearly upset that Korra was gone for so long. Her taking it out there. Taking it out on her there, and like, why would Asami be so upset? Because Korra is still the most important person in her life, and she's really lonely, and that's maybe the entire point of the Hiroshi scene in two episodes ago, just to show the void in Asami's life without Korra there, and now she's back, and she gets upset for Korra questioning her doing something that she had to do because Korra wasn't there. Like, from Asami's perspective, that's really... It's pretty clear to me.
And they are deeply important to each other. Like, that's not an arguable fact.
No.
But, like, seriously.
To how far it goes or as to why you can.
Seriously, though, like, from Asami's perspective, Korra's questioning what she had to do because she was lonely because Korra was gone. Like, that's just pretty infuriating. And I can understand why she got upset at that. But, like, I don't know. And back to the blush, it is deliberate, right? Big thing is these type of things is how much is it in the script? It's always this way with these romantic moments, right? Like, is this written in the script? Is this something that was there during storyboarding? Not to discredit what was there during storyboarding. That's not like they can just sneak it in. They storyboard it. They send it to the producers. They revise it. They send it to animation. They animate it. It's deliberately there on many levels of the production aspect. And I just don't see how you don't interpret the blush as romantic. And
everyone's talking about it, period, no matter how you view it. The fact that you're talking about it proves, I think, how deliberate it was on the artist's part, on the creator's part.
I'm thinking of, like, alternatives, and they all are pretty straw man. You know what I mean?
I think Sam brings up, I mean, I anticipated some pushback. So Sam brings up the Bolin Korra blushing thing in 105, K-105, and then quickly discredits it. I think she's completely right. Korra's blushing because she had romantic notions thrown at her, right? Like, that's pretty clear. The only other thing I can think of...
complimented her at that point in her life anyway.
So yeah, so it's also the...
Very unused to that.
Yeah. It's also the first time someone's complimenting her romantically, right? So, book one, mem flashbacks. Jeez, Korra's mindset in book one. Wow, it's completely different, really. So much growth. Anyway.
Who was Asami in book one?
She was Mako's annoying
girlfriend. She in book one?
And that shows another thing that with book one and Asami is that, like, she didn't get that way with Mako. She only got that way. We've never seen Asami this mad before. Ever.
Well, she did do the boil it yourself.
Well, the boil it yourself. That was not sass. She was pretty angry.
She was angry.
Had this not... like, more times she would have thrown that pot at him.
What I'm saying is that, like, she's, like, the volume of her, like, the way she gets with Korra, like, we have never seen her that mad.
I think the thing about what happened in the dinner scene, not so much volume or anything like that, or what happened, is how fast it happened.
Yeah.
Because Korra literally said one, and Korra wasn't even trying to be mean, she was like, you know, she's been gone for 3 years, she was literally like, are you sure, like, you want to talk to your dad? And Asami, like, immediately, like, snaps at her.
It's like book one Asami, it's a slow boil, funnily enough, because she says that to Mako about her getting mad at Mako. Like, it takes a while. Korra, she's gone. She's had 3 years, she's tired, like, she's going off on Korra. It's great.
Which possibly, the depth of feeling. Asami possibly just kind of, like,
still angry at her father and still, like, defensive, and that channels, like, that helps funnel in the emotion, you know?
Well, and that's the thing, too, is I think Cora's an easy punching bag, if that's the tension she's feeling, is that she's questioning this stuff at her dad. Like, Cora's an easy target, because she is mad at Cora.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's, like, multiple things that are going on there.
I feel like a lot of Asami's
arc. At least the yelling part, just talking about the yelling part.
I feel like a lot of Asami's arc just relates to how, like, she's rebounding, like, off what her father caused her. I mean, book two, it was with the company, and book three was just kind of her rekindling and getting a, getting a relationship that she could, like, hold on to. I mean.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely true. Like, you could really interpret Asami, we've been over this many times, we can really interpret Asami's arc as her latching on to one person after she was completely abandoned by the only person in her life in book one.
Which is really sad.
It is very sad. It's a completely tragic story. And goes Mako and then into Cora. And now that Cora's gone, she's trying to find her father again, and Cora's back, and now she has all these feelings, but Asami doesn't really display them that much. It's interesting. It's really Cora the one displaying feelings there. Anyway, yeah, go ahead, Rick.
I was going to say that Asami is, like, emotional, but she's not very forthcoming for why she feels the way she feels. Does that make sense?
She's not she doesn't articulate.
Yeah, she doesn't articulate what she's feeling. She clearly has, like, a lot of emotions, one of the more emotional characters of the show, but she doesn't tell people what she's feeling,
like,
or why.
Like, we see it, we don't hear it. Like, we see her, like...
She doesn't tell anybody.
Some of the most pitiful facial expressions.
I think that's going to be her arc, though, like, her overcoming, like, the emotional stuff. Like, she's finally going to come to terms with how she feels. She's going to express how she feels. She's going to be her own person.
Yeah, speaking of her arc, like, it's very not clear at this point what of Asami we're going to see. Asami's in the trailer we're completely done with now. So, like, how are we going to...
I was almost convinced that, like, Hiroshi was almost, like, I mean, it wouldn't be the last we'd see of her, but I almost felt like that was her closing, like, kind of arc, in a way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they did it with they did it with Kaya, so I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I knew we'd see more.
Oh, yeah, where's Kaya?
She's not on the show
anymore.
She's
in the South Pole with her mom. Jeez.
What?
Jeez. Yeah, you completely missed that.
No, I missed that.
So, that was, like, so 1 week ago. Gosh.
We don't get to see her, or we don't get to hear her listen to or sing, Secret Tunnel.
Yeah, it's so upsetting.
Mountain, secret.
Okay. That is not this episode. Okay. How Asami's emotion, like, how Asami will express these feelings she has in the future with who, I don't know. We have no concept of how that's going to happen. Is she going to be doing something while Cora and Mako are out, or is she there and we just don't see her in the shots? Like, could that just be a three-person journey? It's not clear.
Them?
It's not really clear. I don't think so. It seems they're deliberately showing just Cora and Mako, but I don't know.
There'd be no point.
Anyway,
wait for that field trip. I'm so excited.
It's almost assuredly next episode.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of excited, too. I just want them to...
I want them to talk, and I want the tension to be erased, and I want, like, her to explain to him why she didn't write to him. Like, I want her to, like, because I don't think she understands why she didn't write to him either.
Well,
I think she, because I think, she, well, if you're going to interpret the blush,
why,
you know, like, I don't know.
She's feeling and why.
It's also very possible Cora just has romantic feelings for two people at the moment.
It's
right?
Very possible, but I mean, you write to people who are your friends as well as your girlfriends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, the fact that she didn't write to them when they were clearly very close friends is just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
She's clearly holding something in.
She doesn't think that they would understand, and I think that's what next episode's going to establish. I think that, and I think Mako is going to find out pretty much what's happened to her, and I think that's going to be the...
Anyway, okay. Well, we'll get speculating at the end. Circling back, like, we can't even move on yet. I had stuff to say 10 minutes ago. Okay, circling back to the blush for a second. It's like Sam brought up the 105 spirit of competition. The only other comparison I can make would be Toph blushing in The Serpent's Pass when Asami rescues her. So this is when Asami rescues her, yeah. So that's just like obviously Suki. That's just a really weird situation, and the blush can totally be seen as embarrassment there, right?
I mean, what are blushing physiologically is what? Your blood pressure rising?
It's,
which could be caused
blood
by
being drawn out to the outer layers of the skin.
Thank you, Britt. Yeah, but I think it's correlation with blood pressure rising, which in Toph's case is obviously embarrassment. But I don't. That's why I wouldn't say, like, how Sam pointed out with the Bolin blush. Like, there's different context for when this happens.
I mean, in real life, there's a lot more blushing than we see on the show. That's my point, though. Like, on the show, the only blushing we ever see is.
Yeah.
The only blushing we ever see is romantic, right?
Yes.
Except for maybe that embarrassment with Toph. And here...
Which was a result of romantic stuff, though, because she...
It's also romantic stuff thrown in, yeah. And I also...
She is in love with Hawkeye, clearly.
And I also... it's like, you could... The only thing you could maybe say is Korra is embarrassed at the compliment, but Korra gets complimented other times,
Jenora,
and she does not.
But Jenora also complimented her hair the episode before.
Yes, like, she's only blushing at Asami, at this person who means a lot to her. It's, exactly. I don't know. This is just something that's, to
she
me, is just so...
Blush at other people commenting on her hair and shown her, like, obviously being subconscious about it, but she hasn't shown to be self-conscious.
Yeah, Britt, your quality's a little off, by the way, so try hanging up and recalling. But anyway, so, yeah, it's just shocking because it's just so clear. It's such a clear romantic thing.
Like, it wasn't just...
I didn't expect this from the show, and I'm really wondering where they're going to go with this, right? Like,
if they're going to go. I mean, Sam does make a point that they might not. They might literally...
What's the point, though? Like,
exactly!
I don't understand.
They want to give friends with it? They want to give the fans what they want, and they can... This episode, by the way, is classic
Mike and Brian trolling in the final season with shipping.
And if they don't...
Just showing all the ships in one episode, right? Like... We'll circle back to some of that. That was an extensive. I mean, that was like a half an hour discussion. I don't know.
That's still
someone blushing.
I think it's still probably not enough.
We this didn't cover all own, our bases yet.
This could warrant its own podcast. Anyway, we're still in Act 1 of the outlines.
Let's continue. Podcast 1.
You don't even know what number this is. We're gonna hit 150 in 2. By the way, I wouldn't have nothing special planned. Anyway. Yeah, Asami, as Mel said, Asami tells them she visited her father. Korra questions this. Asami gets angry. You don't get to disappear for 3 years and act like you know what's best for me. You know what's best for me, too, line. Jeez. My royal bladder is about to explode, says Wu.
Breaking
attention.
Wu
is my...
Mako goes to the bathroom with him, but not this time. Wu is attacked in the bathroom
because
and kidnapped.
He's brooding.
Can we talk about how awkwardly Mako is sitting on, like, the edge of the booth?
Yes.
Is Mako ever not awkwardly doing something?
The worst bodyguard ever.
Well, he seemed like a pretty good bodyguard. Before this episode, he seemed like a pretty good bodyguard.
Yeah, yes.
The only reason he didn't go to the bathroom is
he was finally
he was
tired of watching the Prince pee.
See, and I
mean,
feel
that's,
that,
that's,
and I think he was embarrassed.
I have more issues with later in the episode, which I will bring up, which is why Mako complaining during the episode is really irritating, because it is all literally his fault.
It is kind of his fault.
But
Bolinberg is still in the Ewok trap, says Mel.
That's exactly what it was.
Yes. Again, Korra Book 4 is Star Wars.
It really is
fact.
Just Star Wars. You know who
I'm
has...
I'm actually having a Star Wars marathon tomorrow because my roommate's never seen them.
What's the order? Are you going in the recommended
Jeff
order? See,
this is the thing. We farmed this out because 4, 5, 6 seems best to give her context to the first three, but I also am an advocate of watching them in chronological order because of the narrative it creates.
Okay, that's not on topic. You know who has incisors as a sharp
incisors.
As an incisors and scissors
sharp
as a knife.
Dylan, they're teeth.
Julie, group
they're not
of,
scissors. They're teeth.
Teeth are scissors, aren't they? Group
no.
of prison
no.
camp escapees find them. So the two people of these prison camp escapees have names in the credits: Baraz and Anna.
But they didn't say her name in the episode, though, did they?
I don't think so. Anyway, Baraz is voiced by Steve Blum, and Anna is Nika Futterman.
Okay.
She has not previously voiced her. Anyway, Steve Blum, obviously a mom. And awkward lunch. Wu hasn't come back. They go looking for him. Korra finds the laundry truck. Wu says, I'm in laundry. And the chase scene ruins.
I'm in laundry. Wait, did you guys see Big Hero 6 at all?
I have not seen it.
No.
Okay, well, it's like that scene from the trailer with Baymax where he's like, we jumped out a window.
Yes. Yes.
And he was on low battery, so he was like basically drunk. I'm in laundry.
Like, what did they drug him with?
Yeah.
Drugs.
Well, not chloroform, because chloroform is colorless. I have no idea what they drugged him with, because...
They could have just put it inside the perfume, you know.
So they
maybe
it
was
red.
The perfume.
Yeah.
He did ask for double spritz. Maybe this is what happens.
Yeah, double spritz, yeah. Anyway, act two, chase scene. I know these streets better than you. I built some of them, says Asami.
That's right, Asami. You tell him.
Okay, so it's a little annoying that Asami seemingly has built the entire city. Like, that's not realistic. But at the same
time... I'm not annoyed. I think it's
good. Dylan, she had to build the overpasses over the spirit vines. She didn't build the entire city. She helped the project to...
Interesting interpretation.
Spirit vines destroyed it.
Asami interesting. Is literally Bruce Wayne. I'm totally okay with it. Like, she's taken over Republic City, and I'm fine with it.
I heard Bruce Lee, but I thought Bruce Lee, and I was confused.
I can't remember where I saw this, but is the series going to end with something in the epilogue being Asami elected president of Republic City?
I would be fine with it. Yeah. It's like Hermione possibly becoming Minister of Magic.
Yeah, like, I think that's, like, totally a direction they could go.
Asami could become canon, and she could be queen.
No, thank you.
No,
please.
Wuko instead, please. Anyway.
Yes, I go.
They catch the truck, but Wu is not there. Hail Hydra. Why is this Hail Hydra?
Because he was like, all hail, great uniter.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh my god, he's going to totally bite down on a side.
I know. I was really waiting for that moment. I knew they weren't going to do it, but I was totally prepared.
Last season, the Red Lotus was Hydra. Now, Kuvira's supporters are Hydra. Like, what's going on? Anyway, just everything. I think
except now, like, the match hybrids.
Mako arrests the driver. Okay, and today's worst line of the episode goes to Mako's arrest speech. Not that it was bad, it was just went on forever.
There was a lot he was telling him to do.
Yes.
What are all the things you have to do? Yeah, when you
it's like, okay, that all makes
like,
sense.
Write a list, Mako.
It all makes sense, but like, we didn't need to hear that. Okay.
I love how mad he is. It makes me happy.
Because he cares about
that
him
is,
so much.
That is rude. Don't be happy at his anger.
No, like, it has a meaning.
Yeah,
like, because of Wuko, yes.
Because of Wuko, it's true.
Listen, it's, look, his, Mako, it's totally know. His fault that Wu is missing.
Yes.
But sitting there in his mind, he's thinking, oh crap, it's my fault because I'm all upset about Korra not writing to me.
Like, I know Mako's upset that his boyfriend's missing, so he's going to be all brutal.
No!
No, it's completely like when he was upset about Korra. He's upset that Wu is missing. The parallel is right there. Wuko is so canon.
Yeah, it's obviously canon. Mako,
Also, he knows it's his helmet. The cop's helmet. What was that? Is he a gladiator? Like the metal bending cop helmet?
Yes. Answer yes. Like, Korra uses the spirit vines to locate Wu at the train station. I'm glad they're bringing us back. Mm-hmm. Now Korra just has infinite power like Jinora does. So that's good.
Fine with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she does it on the floor later too.
And it made a point. Like they've actually.
She does it on the metal floor. Like.
That was great. I was like, no, stop.
How would
I
want
to know
that?
What it looked like to everyone.
There are vines.
They were like, what are you doing?
I guess there were vines under it, right? That had to have been the explanation or something.
No, I think, really no I think Korra can vines. Tap into everything now. Like, I think she could...
The escapees want to use Poland and Beric to cross the border out of the Empire. Kuvira has been locking up non-Earth Kingdom citizens... of the Earth Empire. Bolin insists they can't help them. Lava bends. If any of us want to get out of the Earth Empire alive, we'll have to trust each other. So this is the most... this is basically the only interesting thing of this plot point is the... not the only interesting. The Bolin and Varric character development is there. But in terms of the plot of what's going on, the only interesting thing to me is the fact that Kuvira is locking up non-Earth Kingdom citizens, non-Earthbenders, and they're kind of uniting against her. The comparisons of fascism are definitely there, right?
And it's hinting
at... it's what, ethnic cleansing?
Yes.
I mean, it's not as clearly one group, right? This is just everyone who's not her people.
Well, yeah.
And
yeah,
she also is just locking them up.
It's like,
too, right?
It's like not the reverse, but it's ethnic cleansing from the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, she is... And it's interesting, they call the labor camps prisons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not
mm-hmm.
like... which is not necessarily what they were, like Stalin's camps or whatever, right? They're just mm-hmm. more...
Stalin's camps are just prisons, I think.
Are they, or is it actual, isn't there like, or like, I guess that's more of a, like Mao's camp.
Yeah, because Stalin's thing was that he literally just threw them in prisons very like, because it was communism and he controlled the state, like he could do whatever he wanted.
I guess the Chinese war camps, right, are a better parallel or something like that? It's been a while.
It's North Korea, Dylan, it's North Korea.
It's not North Korea.
There's a lot of camps in the world.
Yes.
This is summer camp? Is that what this is?
That's not one of them.
What you just said there? Okay, that's that was kind of insensitive. Okay, Bolin insists.
Interesting point.
Yes, point on the B plot in this act
of Ozai at this camp. That's why
you were You are a treasure, you know that?
Yes, Delaney?
We keep talking about, people keep pointing out, like, the Republic City thing on a map, and how people keep talking about we might be heading to, Kavira might be heading to Republic City, and, you know, it makes sense, since it's why not? Treasure. Well, if Kavira is clearing out people of not, if she's clearing out water, people of Water Tribe descent, and Fire Nation, and any, you know, everyone who's not Earth Kingdom, well, it would make sense to go to Republic City, which was stolen from the Earth Kingdom, and is full of people who aren't of Earth Kingdom descent, and are of mixed descent, so...
Like Mako and Bolan, yeah.
Yep.
It's interesting. I'm not necessarily as convinced she's going to...
I don't think that's, what's going to happen, but...
I also don't think she's as abrasive as that, or...
Yeah.
The word I want to use is...
And again, Kuvira hasn't said anything that's for herself. And she was even telling... she wasn't afraid to tell Bolan what was going on, but she didn't mention that at all. So I'm curious if this will come up, if she will mention this later, because Kuvira does not, she's fine talking to Batar and stuff about, all the crap she's doing, so I'm curious.
If she brings
it up, it would become more of a, purpose. But right now, it's just this is something that's happening.
I don't see her mounting an offensive against Republic City, because she was there once and said, as long as they stay out of our business, we'll stay out of theirs, because she's concerned with the Earth Kingdom. I don't think she cares about that land, and I don't think the ethnic cleansing going on is all that big to her either. She just wants everyone who's not Earth Kingdom out of her land. So I don't think she feels the need to go walk her way up to Republic City and cleanse them as well.
I don't
think this is what's going to happen. I was just saying this is something that...
She's going to go to Republic City eventually. I actually think this episode makes that less likely. We're getting action in Republic City.
I don't think the train station or whatever they mentioned Omashu.
They did mention Omashu. That's the first Omashu mentioned in forever.
There's a train going there.
You would think Kuvira taking over Omashu would be a big deal.
The hidden cave of two lover theories.
No.
What if the train goes through the cave of two lovers?
Oh no! Don't destroy it.
If it would be anything,
what if they there was this whole environmental struggle and protesters and they were no, save the cave of two lovers, and they're it's the most direct way to Omashu, and they just built a train tunnel through it.
Yeah, that's actually a plot point.
If anything, it's a
prison. And they'll be like, this is a historical landmark
there's a plaque and everything
for the Omashu people and now Avatar Aang and Katara.
Yep.
Them airbenders,
and then we just get
it's a museum.
Then we just get a 5-minute flashback to that episode.
An entire act of the episode, actually.
That's just it. Okay, Korra explains swamp stuff and Toph, a cranky, more miserable version of Lynn.
We mentioned Lynn twice, and I haven't seen.
And I thought this was actually kind of funny.
She's busy arresting that guy and doing all the things Mako said that you have to do when you arrest people.
Yeah, 30 seconds long. Yeah, I know. I liked the cranky, more visible version of Lynn. And Mako's like, is that possible? And Korra's like, you'd be surprised. And I thought that was good. It was a weird shot, but it was... Yeah. I liked it.
It wasn't that face, though.
No.
The one from... Why is Allie not here?
Because it's 5 a.m. in Japan. Split up in the train station to look for Wu. Not that that held her back from being up at 4 a.m., so, you know.
She still hasn't responded to my lines.
Okay, that's great.
She didn't even read them.
Wow, that's... You can tell when people... I don't know.
Yeah,
how that
it'll
app,
say...
I don't know how that app works.
It's like the tag on iMessage.
I see. At the board...
Oh, no, she did read them. She still didn't respond.
Wow, scandal. At the border checkpoint, they convince the guard to let them go through. One of the guard notices their wanted posters, and they're surrounded. Hooray.
How many times has this happened, wanted posters?
This one scene.
Did I say act 4?
No, you didn't.
This is why I'm supposed to wear my glasses.
This one scene really annoyed me of Bolan and then Varric talking to the guard to let them through. This is just seems so stereotypical to me.
It was funny though.
I don't know.
Yeah, Varric talking.
I thought Varric's line was really funny. That's such a cliche is the way they get around not having papers. But
it's like you would be sorry if X heard that.
Yeah,
you were...
that's a massive cliche. And it's a trope.
I'm so tired of that. Okay.
I would be afraid too.
Yeah, but we have. When have we seen this in court?
Varric's whole speech about shoving the papers into a hog monkey's mouth as it tried to eat him. That was a pretty good.
I think Varric's use in this commonly used trope made it have some merits because it was very, very funny.
I'll agree with that. Varric's part was better. Yeah. Anyway, Act Three. The group.
Just because you don't like tropes.
Not Act Four.
Act Four. The group is
surrounded. I'm seeing four lines though. So
by
I don't.
Kuvira. No, there's three lines there. Kuvira's men. There's no way I'm going.
I have to go to eye therapy next.
Back to. There's no way I'm going back to prison. Sounds
it's not
familiar.
Funny.
Sounds familiar. It's just making more laughing. Okay. Sounds familiar. Fight ensues between water/firebenders and mecha tanks. Yeah, this.
I doubted myself. I didn't know they were called mecha tanks.
They are mecha tanks. Anyway, by the way, what's his name again? Baraz is Juan, for the record.
Yes.
He's Juan's great, 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 great.
But he also
said
Gazan's line about not going back to prison.
Yeah,
I know. Like, I was really confused.
And there were posters of Balin and Varric.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah, that's what.
That's how they identified them.
Yeah, I said that. I was like, how many times has that happened?
Varric rewires we already discussed this, a thing, to deactivate the suits. This was also the machine on the cover of Asami's magazine earlier, was it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They do this with newspapers also.
Yeah, they put stuff in there. I still got that Varric touch, says Varric, obviously. Varric and Balin. Varric and Balin go to leave, but Balin refuses to leave the group behind and uses lava to melt the checkpoints. Why did he not do this from the beginning? Comments Mel. Thanks, you didn't have to come back. Yeah, I kind of did. A+ dialogue, Mike. Good job.
The way Balin said, like, when he jumped over the barrier and was like, I think when he said, like, no, wait, like, we have to help them, I was like, what? The execution of the line sounded strange to me.
Minus the awful line.
There's just not really any build-up to it, right? Like,
I thought the music cue there was really awesome.
Oh, actually, the music during this entire fight scene, I think, was an original, I believe, and it was just really good.
Yeah.
Props, Jeremy, obviously. Oh, by the way, last night, Jeremy Zuckerman tweeted, let me find it.
Tweeted.
My, oh my, so proud to be on this hashtag Legend of Korra ride, almost there. There you go.
We're halfway there.
Presumably more than halfway there.
This has been the most musical podcast.
We are presumably more than halfway there, okay.
Just wait till Allie and I get our ukuleles together.
Oh, no.
She bought one.
Why would... Oh,
yeah, and I heard it's orange.
At the train station,
okay, well, that's dumb.
They can't find him. Korra uses spirit... floor to locate his train. How do you know for sure he's here? I don't. I had a feeling, okay?
Like, Asami's like, yeah, I'll follow you, Korra. Then Mako just won't shut up. I'm like, Mako, be quiet for 2 minutes.
And I'm just supposed to trust your avatar feelings?
Well,
you wouldn't have to if you guarded the prince like you were supposed to.
Yeah, even though it's all his fault. Yes,
yeah.
I what's going
and
on.
I loved it because he knows that it's his fault, and he knows that it's his fault because he got mad at Korra. And
yep,
I think that
yep,
he's
yep.
just, like, taking it out on her. And, I mean, I was proud of her.
Like, today is Korra's everyone's punching bag day.
Yeah.
Like, I can totally understand, like, seeing, not being, like, mad at Mako from the scene. And I, from this episode. And I wasn't either, even though he was totally acting dumb. But can you, like, this is the type of thing, I think, that gets people not to like him. Like, him just acting like this always, you know. I don't know. This is stereotypical Mako. Even though I do think the fact that I didn't not like him in this episode is a sign of, like, them having made him more sympathetic recently.
Yeah.
Which they
like,
have.
I think he's more sympathetic than he was in the past.
Definitely.
Well, I mean,
yes.
You remember that awesome punch hug he had with Balin. I mean...
that's the only thing.
That's the winner.
Yeah, that's
really
obviously
excessive...
It. No, actually, though, I do think the pairing of Mako and Wu has been a great success this season.
Yeah,
like,
no,
that has really
helped
Mako's
character.
Either. And Wu has obviously...
brought him down to earth, I think.
Yeah,
yeah,
it will.
Immensely.
Anyway, they find him in the luggage compartment in a trunk, and...
And like, stop, listen, guys. Like, obviously the trunk is moving. You saw this before.
Yeah.
Stop.
I hate to break it to you, but
I
realized
this was
vacuum sealed.
Like,
he would have suffocated before he got
guys,
to Kuvira.
I think
they poked holes in it for him, okay?
Scooby-Doo, like,
anyway. As I saw on Delaney's Tumblr, Wu got out of the trunk and thought he was in heaven because he saw Mako.
Yes.
So hashtag Wuko.
Yes. It's immense.
Immense with Wuko. Kuvira's supporters attack them. The fight moves to the top of the train. Metal benders surround them. Eventually,
We need to talk about Korra's facial expression and before she launches.
Oh, she threw him on the train.
Yeah, then they throw.
Like,
oh yeah, then she throws Wu on top. Yeah,
like,
was
that
like,
facial
I'm not
expression,
going up there.
And then let's just throw everyone on top. Korra's bending a game. Great, beautiful. By the way.
Yeah,
I guess.
Except that that's not so.
Yeah.
She bends. Then she bends everyone off the train. Why did she do that originally?
Also, I called this in the trailer. It was a girl on the train.
Yeah, I thought it was too,
called
and everybody
it.
Else disagreed.
Oh.
I remember Delaney. Right. I was with you.
High five, Mirror.
Okay. Good job, you two.
I almost called them equalists. One of the
They're basically equalists.
Like, we saw, like, this little clip, and, like, we saw Asami electrocute, and we're like, who's the other person? It was a girl, yeah.
Wu says Mako is getting a raise.
But good job, you guys.
Good job, you guys. Yeah, this non-existent debate. Wu says Mako's getting raised. Wu thanks Korra, then asks her out, and then she says no. Maybe I'll put you down for a maybe. How about a never?
That was great.
That was a good line read.
Korra and this episode make me so happy. Like, their interactions are great.
This is Wu going too far here, but it's still lovable.
And I he was funny, and that I like that Korra just expertly rejected him completely.
Well, it's almost like he doesn't even want to. Like, it's just he feels like he has to. It's an obligation for Wu to be.
It's like, oh, this is how I best thank
you. Yeah, this is like how I have to do this.
Is this Wu just questioning his own existence? Like, oh, this is me. I have to do this.
But since Ali's not here to talk about it, I do think Janet's line read there was really. Really good with the how about never. That was my favorite of the episode.
Back to the episode, Korra apologizes for the messed up reunion of photos, kind of like old times, except for the getting on each other's nerves part. Actually, that is like old times for me and Korra.
Forever!
And then look. They hug it out, Wu tries to get on it, and Korra shoves him. Okay.
I did appreciate the look, for the record.
Talk this scene and the Makora mirror.
Okay, Asami mentions that their reunion was pretty much like old times, and then Mako freaking says, actually, that is old times, and look out how they look at each other, like, he just looks down, and he looks so happy and smiling, and she, like, I don't know if this is appropriate, she gives him bedroom eyes.
I don't know if bedroom, okay. No. It was certainly an interesting look, I don't know how I'd describe it.
It was fondness.
It was something small, but it was something that they found to connect, like, back to their old selves to each other.
That's
like,
true.
We need to remember also, like, what they're, at least for me, they were referring to book one and all the fighting and ridiculousness. So it was kind of like, that was awkward.
I don't think they were necessarily referring to, like, book one. I think they were referring to.
Yeah, I thought it had to be book one. Book two, they were just dating.
When they were most on each other's nerves.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they, like, literally the beginning of the relationship was Mako and Korra hate each other, but Korra's like, I actually love you. Like, that was book one. So I feel like that's what they had referring to.
I feel like this comment was made from, like, all of the seasons, like, because it's been, like, off and on with them.
I guess my question is, what does old times mean?
Yeah.
I guess. I just feel like symbolism of something, like, that they can connect to, and, like, just, I don't want to try to get into speculation, because I'm sure we'll do that at the end, but the scene was there to insinuate that there are still lingering feelings.
Which I'm sure there is, because they'll have been playing that game since basically those two broke up. But
yeah,
I don't know. I don't even think it matters what the old times were. I just assume they meant when they were, like, being brats to each other in the first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that was a joke with your friend. Like, that's what I saw it as. Like,
oh, we used to hate each other.
Yeah.
But I feel like
I have a friend like that.
Like Mel and Allie.
As in the Korra ship.
Allie, listen, that was one-sided. She did not like me. Actually, no, that's a lie. I hated her because she kept winning trivia.
As a Korra shipper, I see that as, like, a tool for later on.
Wait, are you equating us to Mako and Korra? Because that's...
I completely didn't follow. It should be noted, I did not bring up what just happened, and I was not following this entire conversation, so I don't know what happened. So I'll just let whatever was said be there. Okay. That look at Korra. I think Korra's...
I gave them your address.
Oh, that sucks.
I said curse words.
Oh, okay. That always happens, though.
I feel like you can't interpret her face as, like, romantic. Like, I don't... I mean...
It was a connection between the two, and it implies a past...
Eyebrows were raised.
They were raised, girl. No, it implies their past romantic connection. Obviously, that's
just awkward to do in front of Asami.
Yes.
I think.
Once again, OT3.
I mean, it's the solution.
Those three people, I don't know how they can ever sit in a room together.
Can Wu get in on it? Is that...
That would just make it... worse.
I think what is just what is watching.
I mean, maybe that's what they gave. What did she say? Can you imagine? Sure. About Wu watching?
Yes. Okay. No. Continue. Continuing. I don't know if I can keep that in. I think I might.
Yeah, imagine this. Actually,
last podcast.
This can't stay.
Continue.
No, it has to
I think I can stay. Is there anything, any other, I mean, that, I think that's the big romantic Macora moment, right? Like, this is the big one. Other than Mako's behavior throughout the whole episode, you know?
Yeah, that was the Macora moment.
I will say, overall, in terms of Macora in the episode, I was very surprised that they really didn't act awkwardly around each other.
That was why I liked the episode.
I don't know why they, it was an interesting, that seems like a deliberate decision, because that was their, that Burke 3 behavior, so I don't know why they changed that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it makes
they're not the same people.
Wow.
Literally all four of you talk at once. Okay, that's good.
I feel like they got through that, though, halfway through book three. Like, it was kind
of... Yeah, they did.
It was there for the first couple episodes, and then we sort of abandoned that. And then by the time she hugged him in the last episode, we were done with the awkwardness.
Well, I feel like, the fact they haven't seen each other for 3 years, like, any awkwardness aside, they're friends, and that's what's important, that they're seeing each other. Like, I feel like, that's just a normal thing in general, even no matter how you left off with someone after that long time, after such a long time, and, like, you had that much feeling for, like,
assuming you didn't have an awful breakup.
What?
Assuming you didn't have an awful breakup.
Yeah, but, like, yeah, exactly. And, like, coming together, like, you got, you know, it was just more important, like, they were together and they were just happy to see each other.
I just still don't know how the three of them can sit in a room together.
Yeah, that astounds me. But...
That's a lot of, I don't know what's
happening. None of them, they don't hate each other. I don't understand. Like, I would just be mad on
people. I'm not saying they hate each other. It's just, that's a really awkward situation when it's like, hey, Mako and his two ex-girlfriends are going to go out to get lunch.
Ex-girlfriends who one is crushing on the other and stuff
who
like
might even have their own relationship going on.
Yeah, on the side. Yeah,
and then
Wu's there too.
It's a cluster.
Yeah, exactly. Wu's watching. Yes. Okay. Now I can't edit it out because we referenced it. Okay. Let's finish up.
I mean, that's what happens. He comes out to dinner with them. He just tags along and he watches.
That's true. That's what we're talking about.
That certainly
nothing more.
Sets the stage for Macora like stuff later on, though. That's all.
It's okay. Well, okay.
Relevant topics.
We'll talk future after the end.
Clearly, it's going to be Masami. She was there.
Yeah, where's the Masami at the end? Oh, well, we haven't gotten to the Masami yet. Okay, so then they take Wu to Asami's house. Thanks for asking, Mako, says Mel. Why is that?
Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
Because thanks for asking Asami if I can put more people in your house.
Yeah, that's true. Mako just seems to take them there.
He dumped... Okay, how awful is... He dumped this really annoying human being onto his family and
his
grandma
onto
Asami's
okay with
property. No, his grandma's hype about it. It's great.
To be fair, it doesn't seem like he... Well, not to be fair, but he doesn't seem to particularly like his family that much. I don't know. That was really bold in connecting to them.
True,
but anyway, where his family is staying, Grandma Mako is back as Wu calls him, her. Obsessed with Wu, and they have that great scene of her freaking out. That
Grandma Yin ships Wuko.
Why does Grandma Yin ship Wuko?
Can I just say that
she's going to.
Yes,
Mako,
yes.
Mako, why aren't you dating nice young men
exactly.
like
yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what's going to happen.
Yes, Britt?
He's royalty. Like, it's Grandma Yin's dream.
I'm just happy that Asami is living in that big house by herself, because I was totally in fear of that for
isn't
half,
she still
like,
on
Air
Temple
season and a half.
I don't know where she's living right now.
Yeah.
She's living in her estate, obviously.
Is she homeless?
She's homeless.
Asami, no.
She's chilling with that guy.
She's living on top of Korra's statue.
No, I thought she was still living. I thought she was in Air Temple Island because she doesn't like being in the house.
I don't know.
I feel like is furthered by the fact that Mako offered Asami's house and not Asami.
Well, they haven't really showed where she is. So the Masami here is that Mako's family is in a
maybe
saw
that house.
House.
She could probably give them their own wing and just live on the opposite side of the house and not really be bothered by them.
Yeah, true. Bolin and Varric apologize to the group of escapees. Go with them on their boat to go north. IDK where that is, says Mel. Yeah, well, I don't know.
It's north.
That was funny.
It's north.
Kuvira. Yeah, I'm allergic to drowning.
Yeah.
I'm allergic to dying, especially in the face.
My Batar hate. I'm ready for this.
That was a line from.
Kuvira is drilling. Is this the Vanyangrove tree she's growing?
Yes.
Are we? Is it?
Yes.
Can we talk about how he's
a
radioactive?
I'll
jerk.
Watch it while
we people type radioactive waste with, and he stuck it in a tree.
Can we talk about the fact that they're at the swamp and they're like, let's look for spirit bottles, and then they have to check the gauge? You're the most spiritual person in the world.
You gotta
check
go.
The gauge. I was done. Batar,
I'm gonna Geiger count this thing that I'm sitting on top of.
Can we discuss like how that thing like went off the charts? You know, like the places that have the much radioactivity, like Chernobyl.
No,
it doesn't even do that.
It's a spiritual thing, and then they're in the most physical, the most spiritual place in the physical world.
You know, this
and
is interesting though in terms it. Of if you take spiritual energy as a metaphor for the atomic age.
Well, I feel like that's what they're going for.
So. I mean, obviously, so they're all going to get cancer.
I know, but I'm just saying, it's a connection I made thanks to that Geiger counter, is that basically spirit energy might amount to atomic energy.
It would make sense. Yeah. It would make sense.
Meanwhile, Dylan, why did you make that comment about the Banyan Grove tree?
I mean, I'm watching it right now, so.
Yes, it was the Banyan Grove tree.
Oh, my goodness. I know they pop up to it afterwards. They pan
they
up.
Totally yes, they pan up.
Yeah, okay. It's implied.
It's implied.
It's not implied. You see the Banyan Grove tree.
I know, but they cut shots. Like, it's not
they
the same
that
shot.
They cut Banyan Grove tree. They're not going to cut some random tree.
My question is, how did they get in there without Toph doing anything? So I don't know.
They probably flew because Toph can't see where they are in the air.
Except no one knows Toph's there. Toph is glad your time to destroy everyone.
Right
I can't wait.
Anyway, this was a really interesting thing at the end.
And Batar's stupid.
Why is
I want her
stupid?
To acknowledge that Batar is her grandson.
Why didn't they need to measure the spiritiness of the spirit vines in the most spiritual viney place in the whole freaking world? They don't need to do that.
Spiritual
it's so stupid.
Viney place. Okay. That's good. Anyway, so.
Batar has to impress his lady.
Yeah,
friend.
He's like Kuvira, look! Like, Batar's so dumb.
We'll talk about this scene. But anyway, let's. Okay, so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna grade the episode, then we're going to wrap Sam and Jeff's thoughts up. So wrap Sam's thoughts up, get to Jeff's thoughts which relate to the tree, and then talk about the future, including shipping and everything. Okay. So let's grade this episode out of 10. A 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen, a 5 is an average episode of television. Tell me your grade and briefly why. Let's start with Mel.
I'm gonna give it 7.5, which is, I think, what I gave everything the past, like, 3 weeks. Because, kind of, you hit the nail right on the head where you're like, it was solid, but not amazing. And I do remember thinking during this episode how great the episodes were last season at this point and how amazing they were, and this isn't as awesome.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say it's bad, it's just not as great as what I think was the best season of Korra. I liked the A-plot, did not like the B-plot. Well, it's not that I didn't like the B-plot. The B-plot was boring. Again, fun written dialogue that there's some lines that are poor. But yeah, I mean, I don't really... This one, I don't really have many thoughts on because I actually don't think a lot happened. So, it's 7.5.
All right. Britt.
I give it a 7 because it was funny. They saw me whisper to each other. Bubbling... bended things.
He did.
Woo is my baby. So, yeah. 7. Solid, but not fantastic.
Delaney.
I've been giving, like, the past few episodes, like, 8.5. I think that's what I gave it last time, and then an 8. This episode, I think I'm going to give it a 7.75. My Kurosami feels aside. I really enjoyed the episode. And, I mean, it was a good episode. It was pretty solid. I actually liked the B-plot. And wasn't incredible or anything. Again, like, these episodes haven't been mind-blowing or anything. And so, I really enjoyed it, and I do like the ending. Like, I'm excited for what it sets up for. So, 7.75. It's a pretty good episode.
And Mare.
I'm gonna give it an 8. Without the Makora, because I'm emotional, I would have given it a 7.5. I just felt like I was... It's probably my fault, but I felt like I was anticipating more happening in this episode. It felt kind of underwhelming to me. But, I mean, I liked what was going on. I liked the stuff between Varric and Bolin, and I liked Wu. But, yeah, I give it an 8 because Makora. 7.5 without it.
Yeah, I'm on a 7.5 or 7.75. I think this is the worst episode this season, but it's not, like, bad, you know? Yeah. I just think it's... I think it's very similar quality to the past 4. 3, 4, 5, 6, all very, and 7 now, all very similar quality. I think this is probably worse than any of those, although maybe this should be lower than the coronation, I'm not sure.
I like this one better than I did the calling.
I think that's understandable, I like the kids' dynamics in the calling a lot. Yeah, but it's just on very similar quality. I am worried about the season officially now because we've been stuck in the same category of episode in terms of quality since Korra alone. I mean, like, we hit the highest high the show has hit with Korra alone, and since then we've been stuck in the same thing. Whereas in book 3 at this point we had the first episode, which was a step above this one, 301. 302, a step above any of the past five of the season. We had arguably 304. Definitely 305 was incredible. And then 307, the analog to this episode, Original Airbenders, I think was much better than this episode. So I think the season is pretty clearly a step down from book three at the moment, which concerns me. However, we still have half a season to go.
Yeah. I'm not going to say anything yet.
Yeah, we also just have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
which I love.
It is very good, except for next episode, presumably the rest of the trailer. But okay, let's first get to wrap up Sam's thoughts. We had, other than Sam's essay, she says, cute animals / spirits, everyone is cute. Can I just say that I think Cora is really cute? She's adorable. I miss Earth Kingdom garb later, but like, she's really cute, whatever she's wearing with that hair.
Yes,
whatever.
Whatever. Also, can I just say, it's really weird to me that Cora is 20 right now and that I'm also 20, says Sam. Okay.
Sam and Cora should get married.
Cora also could be 21.
I thought she was 21.
There's no ages. Like, they don't say.
Know.
You don't know if she had a birthday.
She's either 20. Yeah, it's whether she had a birthday in, from books 1 to 3. She's either 20 or 21. I really want to know why everyone isn't more excited to see Cora. It's been 3 years. Also, she was missing. Where are the tearful reunions? I don't know.
Exactly.
Faustino did say heh heh to asking if Mago's gonna cry.
He did say heh heh to asking if Mago's gonna cry. Great. I don't know. Well, maybe that implies that
I would have wanted some running and like group hugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, remember,
just say something
when they were gone for like 4 hours in like book three, episode The Stakeout. Remember when they... Is that the one when they all got back together and there was, like, the running, like, jump hug, like, yay, reunion?
No, that was the ultimatum.
That was the ultimatum, okay. It was the same place. But remember, like, how emotional that was and, like, there was, like, nothing about
This was much less,
This was, like, much less.
Yeah. I really...
Especially how hyped up this episode was.
Yeah. Bolin, like, I wanted tears.
In the fandom, of course. Bolin obviously, Varric Nick doesn't do any hyping.
Need their own miniseries. I'm glad they have their own side plot right now. I don't know. I'm done with Bolin and Varric, but... You know,
I'm like Bolin. Bolin's developing. That. This is all I've been waiting for because I did not like Bolin for 3 seasons. I'm like, yay, I finally like Bolin, so I'm just happy.
Let's skip ahead. Yes, Sam's other thoughts. Sam gives the episode a 6.5 out of 10 because IDK, good stuff happened, but it was very underwhelming. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the prevailing fan theory is.
Can I just say, Zelda Williams' voice acting is ridiculously on point.
She's very good, yeah.
She said one line, and I was like, oh.
I know,
right?
Oh, she's so good.
Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
Jeff's thoughts on this... No, thank you. Jeff's thoughts on this episode. That was a delightful surprise, taking Kuvira to the Banyan Grove tree. I'd assume that the only vines that would work as a weapon would be the ones Vatu created, but it looks like the swamp vines will work just fine. I do hope they change the explosion effect to something more golden-colored to reflect that Vatu presumably had nothing to do with their creation, or maybe he did. Very pleased with how this will bring Toph back into the picture.
Vatu's chilling inside Cora's.
I was worried they'd just let her... True. I was worried they'd just her alone going forward. Do hope the Swamp Benders get to make an appearance, albeit a brief, since they don't stand a chance against the mechs.
I like when he says Banyan Grove tree, you don't question it.
When Toph says, when you what?
When Jeff says Banyan Grove tree, you don't question it.
We discussed this already. On the pod, the Banyan Grove tree. We discussed the Banyan Grove tree already.
No, you laughed and then never gave me my due.
Well, if I... Oh, my goodness. Okay, if I said Jeff first, I would have questioned it then. But you were first.
So anyway.
There you go.
Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
No Wonderwall, please. Anyway. What do you get? So, presumably this will bring Toph out and... More importantly... Not the top's not important, but more importantly, this might trigger the second half of the season, which is the Spirit's Wrath versus the Kuvira's technology. One would think this is where this is going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how that will manifest. Like, there's no. That's the thing. There's no specific.
That keeps. Well, there was character. This is where the season's going, but we don't know how.
Spiritual imbalance.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
And it goes back to Toph everyone's unbalanced. And
yeah, so this probably brings Toph out. Toph.
You'll need to get your inner ears checked.
Yes.
Thank you. You got it.
Toph comments on Batar. You know.
I am so ready for Toph to beat the crap out of her grandson. That's all I want.
Batar Jr.?
Yes.
I wonder.
How dare you call yourself a Beifong?
Yeah,
I wonder
just,
if.
Shame.
And then, you know, you've got Kavir who's trying to be a Beifong.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And her entire. Like, everyone is in
prison. Are we
going to
have their wedding? Because I want to see
I know,
their wedding.
Right?
Probably
I
not.
Wedding.
I don't
no,
see
I
those
really
two
want
ever
wedding.
Actually
that's
getting married.
Next episode is the wedding in the swamp.
Please. And then that's why they're having the wedding there, because they were looking for Toph and they wanted Toph to walk. I can't even finish it. Like, it was so ridiculous. Like, I couldn't finish the thought.
They're clearly going to get married in the Cave of Two Lovers, guys.
Oh, yes.
Any,
you mean the train tunnel?
The train tunnel, yeah.
This is actually just a sightseeing quest.
That's depressing.
Tar and Kavira to just see.
Any actual thoughts on the swamp at the end of this episode?
It's going to end terribly and we're all going to cry.
I do want to know how she... There was no lead up to them being in the swamp. They were just suddenly in the swamp, which I think is kind of weird.
Seems like...
They have airships, they fly, they do stuff.
In terms of an immediate effect, at the very least, they won't be going back to Republic City next episode. Probably the one after. We'll see. It might be that they go to the swamp instead of her going there. I don't know. But I'm very excited about the prospects of the Spirits vs. Technology plotline coming in. Finally... Oh, and Jeff says, Jeff rated the episode 9 out of 10, would watch again, he
Whoa.
Says. That's
Jeff.
Would watch again, he says.
Slow your roll.
I mean, I don't know.
Simmer, man, simmer.
That's significantly higher than ours, I guess.
Maybe he just liked it more than we did, it's okay.
We'll do your feedback, and then we'll discuss the future of the show. You guys' feedback. We have a voicemail from Tato. It's kind of, ooh, is this the right one? It's kind of hard to I'll play it says only 11 seconds here. I'll play it, see what happens. That's always good.
Hello, Gongu Fang. This is Tato. I'm just gonna say that the wrath of Toph is gonna happen.
Okay, that cut off. Well, that's unfortunate. I apologize. There was like 18 more seconds. Basically, yeah, Toph in the spirits and coming back. And yeah, what do we think Toph's gonna do?
Beat everyone up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or ignore it.
There's going to be so much sass and destruction.
There's going
or
to
she's
be going to
destroy the mecha tanks with the vines.
She's
so like,
not
the tree
going
to... is going to come to life. Because remember at the end of the swamp in like Avatar, we saw like it like hit the bird thing when it was making noise.
That's
gonna,
true.
Like,
they never got back to that.
Up,
yeah.
Like in that really terrible M. Night Shyamalan movie where the plants made everybody
what
evil.
Are you
about? It's going to like wrap around, right? It's going to wrap around this mecha tank.
Summoning.
Happening.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the summoning, right?
And then Kavira and Batar are going to hop on the thing and be like, we must find a way
to
attack the swamp.
There to see the swamp fighting back as the first instance of this, like, spirit versus technology.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really nice.
Like a spirit of the swamp, yeah. That'd be interesting. Anon on Tumblr asked me, I'm thrilled that we finally got the Firebender and Zhaofu from last season explained. I wonder if we'll see Swamp Benders versus Kavira, considering she is attacking their home and doesn't like other nationalities in Earth Kingdom territory. That's interesting. That's true. They are
like,
waterbenders.
Does she just not want people to live there? Like, just to hang out or, like, travel? Or is she, like, taking pockets of people who have, like, immigrated and moving them?
I don't know.
Well, it could be... Well, I mean, this is kind of a strange thing, I guess, to suggest, but... with Kavira and, like, you know, I mean, people have made so many theories about, like, you know, the way she dresses and how that relates to her personality, and then, like, she's a metal bender, and, like, the purity of metal could lead to, like, her, how, you know, purity of how she wants the Earth Kingdom to be, and just her personality, I mean, it kind of lines up, but then it's, like, she hasn't said it. Again, it's just, everything about Kavira is, well, now it's not really a rumor, we saw prisoners, but it's never actually... Like, we just talk about it a lot. We don't really see it.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen a camp. Like, I'm really ticked off about it.
Well, you know they're real now at this point.
I mean, I know they're real, but it's like, I mean, I want to see a camp.
Like, I assume this was our manifestation of that episode, right?
Which I was just really, I meant to say something like before this episode. It's like, if we don't see it, like, I want to see the camp. Like, I don't want to just keep talking about it.
And now we have an email from friend of the podcast, Greg Serafin. Let's... Let's start with his Vitar Jr. thoughts. That boy is going to get a whooping from his grandma when she shows up after he tried to destroy her swamp.
Yes,
anyway. Korra, I'm not sure how I feel about Korra being so proficient using spirit vines to track Wu. It's fine when she actually is touching the vine, but when she's in the station and touching the ground, I kind of find that questionable even for Avatar. Basically makes the Avatar a human version of Professor X's Cerebro. I don't know.
Cerebro.
I'm as familiar with that.
It's how he locates. He uses, so his power is like mental. He can read people's minds. He uses Cerebro, which is this machine that connects into his head, and it amplifies his power, and he's able to find mutants through it anywhere in the world.
Yeah, except this is not Korra's power, so...
I'm just explaining what Cerebro is.
I understand. Thank you for the explanation. Asami, way to do the one thing Korra asked you not to do and spill the beans about Korra writing to you. Also, while the comment about Korra's hair was fine and not overdone, this is at least the second episode this season to mention it. There are some great recent studies about gender representation in media, and while I won't get into all of the statistics, this one is poignant and seems relevant. Quote, comment about characters' appearance were five times as likely to be directed at female characters than at male characters. But what comes down to it is that she just met Toph, fought a battle, and is seeing the love of her life, Asami, for the first time in 3 years. Maybe they have better things to talk about than hair. Interesting.
No.
Asami hair is nothing better to talk about than hair.
So his point is that this is just another manifestation of just commenting on females' appearance.
I was just saying silly, but yeah.
I think that's a good point.
They could have talked about something else. I guess if...
That being...
Union, you talk about your appearance and how you've changed.
I honestly think it's small talk.
I think it was fine. Yeah. It seemed fine here, honestly.
It wasn't, like, completely done. If it had been throughout dinner scene and we got more... Like, it was, like, one of the book three dinner scenes and all they talked about was how they looked.
Yeah.
Then it would be very problematic, and I would be very not happy. But they just talked about how, like, you look different now, and your hair's all chopped off.
And I'm sorry, it's really realistic. You haven't seen someone for 3 years, and they got a haircut? Like,
your
hair looks great.
So I think in this context, yeah, fine.
I understand what he's...
Indicative of a general...
I definitely understand what he's talking about.
Indicative of a general problem, but...
Yeah, it's very indicative of a general problem.
Bolin, it is interesting that they all seem concerned that Bolin didn't abandon Kavir after taking over Zafu, when they weren't concerned that his moral predilections didn't get him to abandon Kuvira after she said she wasn't leaving power, or there were rumors or even proof of her prison camps, etc., etc. They're all acting surprised that Bolin's personal connection with Zafu didn't lead him to switch sides, but seem less concerned with the immoral treatment of thousands of people in the Earth Kingdom. Yes, I know they mentioned that as a reason he would switch in previous episodes, but at least in the episode, Opal and Bumi both seem to reference the treatment of Opal's family as their primary grievance for wanting Bolin not to support Kuvira any longer. Interesting.
That is interesting.
I think it's I think it's like them seeing Bolin kind of for what he is, which is someone who would be more likely to care about his personal connections than these larger problems.
Bolin's not a big picture guy.
Yeah.
No, he's not. He just doesn't think that broadly. It's not that he doesn't care.
I think
he's actually starting to care. Like, I think he's starting to see big picture more.
That was actually a pretty good paragraph supporting Bopal. Like, that's like the fact that everyone would expect Bolin only to care about Kuvira, like, being angry at Kuvira because of them going against Opal's family is, like, a big indication that she's super important to him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we did at least get Opal talking in this episode. So
yeah, she did talk.
In the beginning, that's it. Okay.
She wasn't really in most of the episode.
Just the first scene. She's in, presumably, our Temple Island. No... Jinkai / Kainora reunion. No Kai.
I'm starting to not think that's going to happen.
Kai's with...
Obviously, they're going to show. Like, it's got to... Yeah. They got to... I don't know. But
I saw this picture on Tumblr, like, Kai slid out of this episode, and he hasn't been back since. So
like in the first episode, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Let's quickly talk about what's to come on the show, including where they're going with ships. But let's first talk about the trailer shots we haven't seen yet. Mare again has compiled it. There's only... I would say...
seven.
Yeah, there's seven shots, but three of them are from the same one. So that's five scenes, right?
Left. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's Korra and Mako going into an abandoned building where their spirit vines are coming through.
I can't decide if that's Republic City or... I don't know.
I think it is, but that doesn't mean anything.
One would assume it's Republic City, but I don't know. there's Janora flying in presumably a Spirit Vine, the D section of Republic City. That makes me happy. We still haven't seen the Janora scene yet. There is the famous scene of the famous yet to be seen scene of Korra and Mako outside of a thing, a large door with a white letters, a Lotus thing. Guard standing outside.
Yes.
There is Korra walking into a thing with crystals above her and then turning, looking around and looking surprised.
At a thing.
We don't know. And then there's Korra in the spirit world doing the place displacement thing. So the big question is, definitely these are all from at least next episodes 8 and 9, but the big question is, are they all from episode 8? And I can't really see how these all fit together into one episode, but would have been surprised before.
Yes.
I don't know. We would have to have
a... a lot would have to happen.
I mean, I guess what would happen is we have a Mako and Korra plus question mark, like A plot, and then a Janora plus question mark doing things B plot, and then the A plot involves them going to the prison, then down into the... through the house to the prison, down into the actual prison, and at some point she goes into the spirit world and does the time displacement thing. It's possible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question is, well, like, what's Asami doing here? What's Wu doing here? Wu's presumably out of the picture now, right? We've safely put Tuptim to
except
the side.
Except for fun, I'm hoping for fun Grandma Yin and Wu scenes.
They have randomly cut to Grandma Yin before,
I don't think I'm emotionally prepared for those scenes, but I think they're coming.
Yeah. Anyway, future of ships. Okay, let's go more or less likely to happen, to be a clear endgame than you thought it was previously. Masami, more or less likely to be a clear endgame?
Well, originally I gave him a -3% chance, and I think they're...
I think you gave it a positive.
Can you give me your calculation?
I think you said +3%, and I said
no,
down to
2%. Now it's positive, but before it was -3%.
No, I don't think
now
this increases the chances at all, right?
They didn't Which clearly means it's
this is neutral. It was zero before and it's zero now. That's the unfortunate... No, I said 2%.
It was -3%, and it didn't... gain 3%, you gained 6%.
Oh, that's a large percentage gain. Okay.
It is.
Like, it had to gain 3 steps of negative.
Statistically, percentage. That's a large increase.
And then it had to press the threshold to 0, and then do 1 and 2. And
I don't know. Math.
It's increased
math.
A lot. They talk to each other.
They did.
They whisper. He rides a shotgun in her car.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Korra was in the back. That means the people in the front seat.
Family
are,
lives in her house.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Okay. It increases. Sure. Wuko.
I gave you 3%, Dylan. I'm not saying, like, come on.
Wuko
like,
is increased.
900%
okay.
increase.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Korosami, this is the most obvious increase, right? Like,
yeah,
we thought it was zero before, and now I would say, what? I mean, they're not going to have I would say they're not going to have an overtly romantic ending, but, like, I mean, this episode had an overtly romantic moment. What, it's like 5% now? That seems high.
I would give it 20. I would say they might hold.
That's like so high. I mean, not that I'm saying in question. I'm just like, that's so incredible that we're even considering that it might be that high. Considering,
well, I think it might be that high for like an ending that hints at it, but it's not overtly romantic. Like I'm really seeing that now. Like we really could get like, do you know what I mean? Like you're talking about like overtly romantic versus like ambiguous kind of like. I think we could get what air quotes friendship ending, which displeases me. But
there's my friend with a capital F.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Okay, the interesting one, though, is Makora, and you would say, oh, this episode had a Makora moment, so it'd go up, but we anticipated it having Makora, so the question is it actually the chances are up or down?
I say it's the same because I predicted some, like, this arc, like, of them meeting back up and them going on that field trip. I've just predicted that the whole season.
It's basically going according to script, right, this episode?
Yeah.
So I would say...
It's going according to how I've thought it would be.
I would say it's a little down because they didn't have the awkwardness, right? Like, I'm just... Yeah. I think this raises the chances that they just act normally around each other for the rest of the season.
I give it a 75% chance.
I think that's absurdly high. Like, obviously before
I
was...
I can't believe, okay?
No, so before the season, I agree
with you.
Anyway,
here's Wonderwall.
What she believes is...
Stop with the Wonder... I don't even know where that's from. Like,
that's what people say. Anyway,
no,
here's Wonderwall.
No, what are you
And they play Wonderwall.
Dylan, your thoughts, go.
So before the season, I actually did give it around, I don't remember what I said specifically, it was around 75 though. But here's the thing. So here's my thing. Any specific plot point that hasn't happened yet in the show that we don't know is going to happen has got to have a fairly low chance of actually happening, considering how few episodes are left. We have 8... 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That's 6 episodes left, and 2 of them are the finale where a lot of stuff's going to be happening. That's pretty absurd. Like, I'm skeptical.
If it weren't for the fact that we know they're going to be alone with each other, I would probably be a little more in doubt.
But I
don't think a whole episode, though, is going to, even with the whole, let's assume we have a whole episode and it's just
to have.
I still don't think it'd be good.
And remember, this is an overt romantic ending. Of course, we could have a subtle McCoy romantic ending. It's higher, but so to start, to get even anywhere close to that, next episode the A-plot has to be dominated by those two to start. And then we have to start working our way back up. Like, there's a lot
to
cover.
And to be honest, aside from that one scene at the end of the episode, all of the interactions between Mako and Korra, even if you're, like, as a not shipper of anything, like, it seems very platonic, because he's just upset he didn't write.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm saying as a non ship, like, I'm really thinking, no, because Korra's
on me. But you ship Korra's on me, so you're obviously not going to.
No, besides their thing at the end, nothing was overtly romantic.
Like, it's just really platonic. Like, the letter thing. Like, I'd be mad my friend didn't write me a letter, even if I was in love with her or him or whoever. Like, it would be mad. It'd be upset. So I feel like a lot of it's just, without reading into any of it, like, a lot of it just seems platonic, aside from that, except from that look at the end of the episode. So, like, without that, if we have a whole episode of Makora, like, don't know how that's really going to work out well. Like, is it, of it being an overtly romantic ending.
Things I'm skeptical of being endgame. Makora, Julie, and Varric, even Jin Kai.
Listen, like, Julie and Varric, if that's not,
that's what I'm saying.
Love,
the entire planet
is.
Could blow up, yes. because Petar, like, ruins the spirit bomb and actually destroys the earth. Kuvira and Varric will still get together.
I'm skeptical of all that happening. And I mean, we're talking about these like they're independent entities, but the fact that Korra was blushing at Asami, that has to also contradict. I mean, she can have two feelings at once, but they're not going to manifest two things at the end.
It's going to be an OT3. Yeah. It's going to be beautiful.
I mean, they could like have ambiguous endings on both sides, right?
But I'm
like,
also going off stuff that's happened in the past. What happened at the end of book 3 was huge. And how this season hasn't.
Yeah, I know. Korra and Asami at the end, right? That was huge. That's what you were
talking about,
right?
Korra.
No, you were talking about Korra.
Dylan, shut up.
Okay, can I?
Yeah, I'll go.
Okay.
You
two
are obviously not.
I personally don't see Korra ending up with anyone at the end of this.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
That's just where I am with that. I don't think anything's going to be endgame at this point. Certainly things might be canon. But I don't think she's going to be with anyone at the end of this season.
In order to
say that, except if Mike and Brian said they hadn't been having nightmares about the ship that they picked.
They didn't say that, did they?
Yeah, they did. The IG.
When did they say they had nightmares about the ship that they picked?
So here's the thing with Mike and Brian.
When did this happen?
Anything Mike and Brian says is like 78% chance trolling. Like, nothing.
Anyways, just moving on.
Nothing.
Anyway, here's Wonder Woman.
Nothing they're saying should be taken completely seriously.
No. They've been trolling the fandom like all.
Although apparently Mike's Toph thing will happen, and he did say something big would have to happen to bring Toph out, and he wasn't him trolling. Something big is happening. So I don't know. We'll see.
I attacked her home with a chainsaw. I think she's gonna like destroy something.
Toph's coming. Yes.
Anyway,
brace yourselves.
Yeah, I'm with Mel. Like, even though I ship Korrasami, like, I don't think anything's going to be in-game. Like, as of right now, nothing looks like overwhelmingly.
Oh, my comment was, in order to get to a place where any ship might be in-game, I'm skeptical of us even having that type of ending, right? So we have to have a specific type of ending that's not Korra dying and something like that. And then we have to, like,
it could be in-game if they both die.
It'll be Romeo and Juliet, yeah.
Assuming that they said Korra comes to a good place, I'm assuming she don't die.
Good place in the spirit world next to Iroh, right?
It's like when Harry died, he could have moved on, and he'd like, you know, you never know.
It's like when Buffy died and she went to heaven, and then it was awful because her friends ripped her out of heaven.
Yes. Wow.
Rude.
That did happen.
Rude. Spoilers.
Come on.
Really?
And,
it was 2001.
I mean, okay.
That's beyond the level of yelling spoilers at Harry Potter. Like, no, stop. Like, Buffy's been over for...
I could yell Allegiant spoilers.
No, thank you.
I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay. I don't know. Wrapping this up. It's just very unclear what's going to happen in the rest of the series. I'm interested to see the clip tonight, although next episode is the most known entity. So, I'm not sure. Chances of seeing Zaheer next episode.
Oh, that guy.
No.
I don't know about next episode, but chances of seeing him, period, I would give it a 75% chance.
Next two episodes.
I don't want Zaheer.
75% chance.
I think we're looking at like a 15%. But that being said, the chance of anything happening, like any specific thing happening, is like a 5%. So I think it's more likely than a random event, but not more likely than nothing, if that makes sense.
Wow.
Because there's just, we're all assuming this Sahir thing, like that we actually haven't seen anything indicating.
I'm not,
because
I don't want it.
Chances. Yeah, and another possibility is Kai being with Jinora in the trailer scene.
Please.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, that's our Jin Kai.
I just want to see Kai again. Where has he been?
How about we see more than 10 frames of Jinora again?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Obviously.
At least we've seen Jinora.
No. Jinora's on another level. Okay, then Kai.
Excuse you. I agree, but I'd like to see Kai for 2 seconds.
Any last thoughts?
Size
deep. Is next episode called? I think next episode is called the Bob Squad, and it's actually just Korra, Opal, and Jinora, which was my favorite team up ever last week. I don't know, just throw Asami in there, please. Okay, any actual last thoughts on anything?
I am very pleased that Toph appears, hopefully, to be coming back.
We shall see. Anyway, I've been Umanos Dillon. Co-hosts have been Britt, Mel, Delaney, Mare, Tech Retchers, AJ, Kevin, Jeff, Cute Musical Credits, Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp, Logan Banner by Kevin, Dong Fang's owned by Jake, Special Contributor Gareth, Contributors Sierra, Nick, Devin, Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, and Jamie, G, Millionaire, Ceramus, Nick at Night, Rudy, and Spooty, Coin, Fetch, and Opal, Iroh, J, Nora. dongbufeng.net/podcast is the website for this podcast. You can see donation information on the top bar. You can also see our bios. Check out Mare's new bio on the podcast page.
Wait, I'm gonna go look.
Yeah, go read while we finish the podcast. You can follow dongbufeng at dongbufeng on Twitter and Tumblr. You should really be following our Tumblr because it's the place to be. It's where all the kids are happening at.
Okay.
You know,
the kids are happening.
Yeah. You can review us on iTunes and give us a non-dumb negative review like the last one we had. You can
seriously, this is rude.
Follow these Tumblr accounts. I am Dylan FTSW on Tumblr. Send me asks.
City that straddles.
And I will answer your ask. I will answer your ask if it is not completely rude. There's the qualification. And you can follow these guys' Tumblrs in link to from the podcast post on the Dongbufeng Tumblr, which is how you're probably listening to this, maybe. And send us voicemail feedback after next week. Next week should be a normal podcast schedule. The week after that is Thanksgiving, and I'm not sure what we're doing for that yet. I'm going to be out of town.
Do you know for a fact they're not going to be stupid? Like, or do you know they're actually going to give us an episode?
I don't know. We don't know.
Listen. Actually, I had nothing to say.
Listen, are you the fairy?
I was going to make a Thanksgiving comment, but then I couldn't think of one fast.
I mean, it's the day after Thanksgiving. I assume that, like, if they don't give us an episode there, then we're talking.
It's a gift for Black Friday.
Assuming the finale is 2 episodes, if we don't get an episode on Thanksgiving, then we're pushed back into Christmas week. So I assume they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if the finale is even 2 episodes. Nick won't answer my tweets. I've been tweeting at them. Hey,
but the coronation will answer your very mean asks to them with a very polite response.
That's true. They did do that. Coronation follows my personal time. Maybe I should ask them that.
Yeah,
fun. I'll ask them that. They haven't unfollowed yet. I'm surprised.
Give me the episode. Oh, here it is. Sorry it took so long. I felt like a mean person.
I could just ask. I think it's the same people running the accounts, but I don't know. Maybe I will send them an
What if it's Brian?
It's not Brian.
Brian has better things to do than
he's in Korea doing cool stuff.
I know,
taking pictures on the street.
It's run by some intern. Okay,
it's run by
some like
intern.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll run the Tumblr since you guys can't work.
I was that like my job.
Run the Tumblr. I mean, then it would just
I don't
be.
No, I wouldn't want to run the Nick blog. You know how much hate you get?
Yeah, probably.
Not, but seriously. I would be nice though. I wouldn't act like Nick.
Okay, what are we gonna end on?
Oh no.
Ships.
Something Wu said. I'm in laundry.
We didn't talk about him going woo down.
He did go woo down.
When
he was.
When
he
got perfumed or whatever.
Do that.
It was great.
What other stuff?
Droided.
Yeah.
What other stuff?
I don't know. I'm looking at
four
my pictures
stars.
From Halloween.
We have 205 reviews on iTunes still, and we have 4 stars.
Yeah, we
Asami
do,
didn't
we do
say anything.
Stars.
Like she said, sassy things, but nothing funny. But nothing that's funny out of context.
I mean, jokes from the podcast. You guys forget about those. I can only think of Beyond the Blush. That's the only.
I can only be as funny as I can be.
So you're saying you're not that funny?
Saying there's a limit to the one-liners I can deliver you at any given day.
I don't know if you've reached
there's
that limit.
We're watching, but then we will have it acknowledged.
You could just do Beyond the Blush.
Yeah.
We could just do that. Okay.
And then just play some soap opera music.
Yeah, I don't think I feel like I'm too lazy for that, but we could. Okay. Yeah, say one of those things.
Or we can just scream our ships.
That's true. You could say no. Let's no ships.
Yeah,
screaming.
Let's do that.
No. I do want to hear Brit scream Masami though. That'd be funny. Okay. Anyway, thank you, Mel. We're gonna end on something.
I was just gonna go
There's
until
been
the
so
end.
Much. Mel has been singing this entire podcast.
Great A plus effort.
When words fail, music speaks is the
Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, Beyond the Blush.
Cora
Sami.
Beyond the Blush. Mm-hmm.